Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Kickstarter Spotlight episode, and today we're going to be talking about a campaign that's currently running, a very interesting concept, something I know that I personally have thought about many times, there's a lot of different ways we can look at it, but we'll dive into all that. But I do have one of the creators here joining me. We have writer Mike Phillips. So welcome to the show, Mike.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, man. Like I said, this idea of the book that you have, The Tessellation, is fascinating to me. So I want to dive into that, but we do have to take care of a little business first. We always like to ask people when they come on the show for the first time about their secret origin. So give us an idea of how you got into comics. Were they part of your childhood? Did you grow up reading them? What's your story and your introduction into the mad world of comics?
I didn't get started in my single digit years, but I want to say I wasn't much of a reader, but I always thought I was going to be a writer. I have no idea why. When I was five, I started writing like Knight Rider stories. Not much of a writer yet at five or six or whenever that was. I probably just made more titles of stories than actual stories, right? Like The Big Bash or The Big Crash or something like that. But comics came later. I think X-Men number one with Claremont and Lee was kind of my first, ooh, what's that? You know,
right.
Kind of confused. I was like, why? I thought, like, this can't be the first issue of X-Men. I was so confused. You right. know, I had no idea about, you know, the monumental 17-year run that Chris was just about to end. Or, you know, anything from before that, like Kirby and Stanley. But I grabbed that, fascinated by Wolverine, this guy with knives out of his hands. And from there, it was the perfect time because this was when a bunch of other startups were giving him Marvel a run for their money. Like, you know, Dark Horse was doing the Legend imprint, and, you know, Malibu was making some waves, and, you know, Valiant and Image. And it was just a lot. I mean, they used the word glut, and I was down for all of it. I was down for the glut. I would buy one bag to open and one bag to leave, you know, the poly bags. And I was there for it. I had disposable income, so I went for it. From there, you know, I fizzled out in college because the disposable income kind of disappears. And, but after I got a stable job out of college with teaching, you know, middle school, I had some disposable income again. And I stumbled upon this wacky website, my future good friend, Julian Darius, was running, called the Continuity Pages. And the idea of his Continuity Pages was he was going to try and create a database, a reading order for fictional characters based on the chronological life of that fictional character. So rather than read, you know, Man of Steel 1 to, I don't know, 100, it would be, you know, Action Comics 458, Superman 19, Man of Steel 87. You would read, you know, and if they ever did a new origin, like a Zero issue, remember Zero Hour, like he would figure out where to put that and, you know, right. You know, make an area to cram that one in. But he really wanted there to be a reading order from young Clark Kent's life to the end of Clark Kent's life, I guess Superman 1 million or whatever, when he's living in the sun. Or I don't know. I kind of might have jumbled that up. But his idea blew me away because I was a continuity junkie. And I found his email on the site and I said, I'm in. How can I help you? I want to help you make this weird, crazy, wonderful thing. And he gave me some odd jobs. He gave me, like, you know, find the inker, find the colorist of Sandman 1 through 15. And I'm just like going through my trades and, you know, I'm sending him information. And we became friendly through that. And then he started writing articles, you know, every once in a while he'd post an article about something that was, you know, tickling his fancy. And he started, Batman Begins came out in 05, and he started writing articles talking about which comic books and comics scenes that, you know, the Batman Begins derives from. There's a long, you know, bunch of articles about, okay, so this scene from Batman Begins comes from this issue of Dark Knight, Legends of the Dark Knight or Detective Comics. And he had written so many words about it, he thought, you know, I think I'd like to turn this into a book. So back then it was like Lulu.com and maybe CreateSpace, where you could upload a PDF and then it would be print on demand. Mm-hmm. So he literally had a book about Batman Begins out before the DVD dropped. It probably wasn't the best edited thing in the world, but the fact that you can self-publish was a whole new world back then. You know, it was just this shiny new object. And lo and behold, we started publishing. At that point, we had revamped the website to be called SecWart. And that was our first book. And since then, we've been, you know, together for 17, 18 years, and we've published 40 books, like Grant Morrison, The Early Years, and The British Invasion, and Teenagers from the Future, and a book on Daredevil, a book on Green Arrow, a trilogy about Star Wars. And we also made documentaries. She Makes Comics, The Image Revolution, Grant Morrison Talking with Gods, Warren Ellis Captured Ghosts. So, I mean, it's just completely bloomed into this crazy journey that we've been on together. And now we decided we were going to start trying to make our own comics. So since 2014, we have a sister website called Martian Lit, where we've been publishing our own fiction. Together, we've written a comic called Necropolitan that takes place in hell. And now I'm out on my own, no co-writer this time, and I'm doing the Tessellation.
Yeah, and it's so interesting too, because you know you're talking about, you know, that example you used of wanting to tell the story, the life and times of Clark Kent, if you will, and you know where this fits in, where it doesn't, and in so many ways that kind of ties into exactly what we're about to talk about here, you know, with following somebody's life, but adding in the added dimension of the decisions we make and how something as just minor as making a red light or not making a red light can, you know, or stopping at a stop sign or driving 26 miles an hour instead of 24 miles an hour can completely diverge your entire life. So give us in your own words, kind of the elevator pitch. What's the Tessellation all about?
This elevator pitch has morphed a bunch of times. It started out as Sliding Doors meets The Game, but not many people have seen Sliding Doors. So I'll tack on Sliders to that, which is funny. They both start with slide. There's Choose Your Own Adventure in here too. The game aspect is because there's a shadowy organization that can sell vacations to the other, realities, much like Michael Douglas's The Game, where Sean Penn, his younger brother, buys him this weird role play that only wealthy people can afford. Yeah. So I kind of nicked that. I got Choose Your Own Adventure in there. I got Sliding Doors and Sliders, just multiple realities. Any possibility can happen. You know, I mean, there's no purple unicorns or anything, but as long as it's within the realm of possibility, it has happened in this multiverse. So more like a realistic multiverse, no superheroes. I mean, there is some weird kind of pseudoscience going on, but there's nothing like magical happening. And I like the idea that with something this monumentally bombastic of a crazy thing like the multiverse, string theory being real, I liked in the first issue, at least, to ground it with some really banal kind of domestic drama.
I kind of feel like there's two ways you can look at this too, and maybe it just goes to the sort of the duality of human nature here. You know, are you a glass half empty guy or a glass half full guy? You can think of it as, okay, all the potential that somebody has in their life, you know, to go on and, you know, become president or become super rich or, you know, just be ultimately successful. Or you can look at it as, okay, I came up with this idea because I've made so many mistakes in my life and I have regrets. I go back and think, well, what if I'd taken this class instead of that class? Or what if I hadn't made that mistake? So when you were coming up with the concept, I mean, do you identify with one more than the other?
As far as glass half full and glass half empty?
Yeah, I mean, does it come more from a place of possible potential or more from a place of, oh man, kind of regret? And I think people will identify with that more.
I guess I'd have to lean towards half empty in that regard, because there's a lot of self-loathing that comes out in this first issue for sure. It was born from a lot of fears of being an inadequate husband and father. But I'm, it depends, you catch me at any given minute and I'm one or the other. I'm a pretty optimistic person. Mm-hmm. I do feel like we are headed as a world in the right direction. But there are moments when you just feel like it's all just this is the worst. This is the worst timeline if in the tessellation, you know. I know it can be worse, but this is the one we're living in. So any given minute, I could be one or the other, but I'm mostly a positive person. I just feel like in this issue, it's kind of like this is the first time I'm not co-writing with my buddy Julian. So I wanted to kind of, if there's one rule that I had to stick by, it was write what you know. And I'm afraid that I'm a shitty dad and a shitty husband. And I wanted to try to create like almost like a totem or a voodoo doll to kind of put pins in, you know, right. Just to get that out of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if it worked real well, but there was a lot of exorcising of fears in this. So this is this one is kind of glass half empty. Now, the second issue, which I'm currently scripting, it runs the gamut. And one of the realities is massively glass half full, glass totally full. I mean, almost saccharinely sweetly full, because I wanted to show that there, you know, when you think about this concept, there are realities that have gone perfectly mm-hmm. for people, you know, not everybody, but perfectly for some people. And I wanted to show the range of possibilities. And that's the joy of this sandbox, is that you got to let me slide. As a writer, I've created a way to say, well, if someone throws, I mean, this is, I'm not going to do this, but if someone says, hey, what about this, that, and the other? Because I found my artist, Hernan, had drawn European looking license plates on the back of a certain car, you know, a wider right. rectangle as opposed to the fatter ones we have in the US. Yep. And at first I'm like, ah, oh, I didn't notice this a month ago when he turned it in. And now the colorist is working on these pages. And at first I was like, eh, screw it. I mean, in that reality, we have European shaped license plates.
Yeah.
So I was kind of retconning it as I went just yeah. to rationalize not being, you know, being lazy and not telling him I need you to change this. So there, I love the idea that anything is possible and I can just go, oh, no, sorry, that reality, that mistake happened in that reality. That totally human authorly mistake is totally cool in that reality. But
yeah.
Like showing the gamut of possibilities, you know, long story short.
Yeah. And listeners, we do want you to realize this isn't a situation where, you're structuring the story where, you know, we see the main character live a life and then we go back, and he lives a different life and go back. Kind of like we've been talking about the Jonathan Hickman, you know, House of X, Powers of X, where Moira MacTaggert lives all these lives. You're structuring it very differently. Like we're seeing it like physically in the book much differently. Do you want to talk about the way you've decided to structure these different branches?
Yeah. An idea popped into my head. I think it was probably born out of Interstellar. Spoiler alert for people who haven't seen Interstellar yet. So if you want to jump ahead, maybe 30 seconds in this conversation. But yeah, when he goes towards the end, when he goes into the black hole, and he sees this fifth dimensional observation deck of every moment of his daughter's bedroom from the bookcase, something hit me there, you know. But as opposed to showing like every possible moment of something, I wanted to show every possible reality of something. So instead of forward and backward in time, I'm going kind of going sideways mm-hmm. in the multiverse. So it just, that stuck with me. I'm a pretty OCD person. I compartmentalize things in a certain way. So I thought, plus I went out on my own to write my first one. And Julian is usually the one who's literally typing things out. I'm more of the idea guy. So for this one, I kind of had to create a certain like a parameter writing structure for myself. So I didn't have to decide between, does this page have six panels? Does this page have four panels? So I kind of created rules for myself so I could just get it done.
Right.
And between the you know, the thing at the end of Interstellar and my OCD and needing rules, I was like, oh, let's tell this in rows, where once it splinters on page 8 from this one seemingly innocuous choice, here are three different results of the amount of foot pressure that this guy puts on his car's accelerator. And from the rest of the issue, you can just read one row at a time, or you can absorb it typically, which might lead to a completely different story experience if you just read it page by page as opposed to row by row. So yeah, on page 8, you could just read the top row all the way to the end and see what happens, kind of choose your own adventure deal. So yeah, I'm you know, from page 8 on, it's all rows.
Yeah, it's so, again, it's just so fascinating to me because I feel like it's, no matter if you're a glass, you know, half empty, saccharine sweet kind of guy, you know, all the way on one extreme, or you're just, you know, the most morose, depressed person in the world with living with constant regret, we can all relate to this. We've all made choices that haven't worked out, and we've made choices that we're, you know, we're glad that we made them. So in that way, it's, I think this is a super relatable story, no matter what direction you're coming at. So when you hit on the idea first, did you realize how everybody would kind of have their own sort of gateway and way to sort of put themselves in the story?
I was worried at first because I had a feeling like this had been done before. And I do feel like there's kind of a Swamp Thing arc from Alan Moore and co. Was it Bissett and Veitch? I have a feeling like this happened before. So at first I was almost ready just to kind of throw it away because I wanted it to be something fresh, but I said, screw it. I'll just keep going with it. I was getting some good advice from some friends that as long as you do it and kind of put your own spin on it and it comes from the heart, it doesn't matter if this particular musical style has been done before. Yeah, everyone makes a punk song when they're 17.
Right.
You can make it your own. So, you know, At first, I was just worried that this would look like some sort of gimmick or a knockoff of something else. I don't really remember the Swamp Thing thing, but I think there was a main story happening in the top three quarters of the page, and then there was a separate story going along the bottom. So at first, I was worried about that, but no, I mean, yeah, I really wanted it to be very banal. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, banal. I just wanted it to be down to earth, and that helped me because in the write what you know aspect, I'm afraid of just not, I always feel like the tessellation is just sitting on my shoulder like an angel and a demon, you know, like I could say something right now in this interview that could get me fired. You know what I mean? I could I could fall down the stairs and break my leg. And now I'm, you know, anything could happen. And I kind of live in this weird torturous, I kind of torture myself with this stuff. And I felt, let me get that out on the page. I think people will relate to the just down to earth. Like I said, it's very high concept and gimmicky, but if you tell a story that is super mega down to earth, like going to Home Depot to buy a bag of salt, and then you're on your way home where someone tries to pass you on the right and you decide, this guy's not passing me on the right. We've all kind of been there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you maybe have gone a little slow in the fast lane, but this guy's not going to teach you a lesson. You're going to teach him a lesson. Yeah. And there's that moment where you can kind of go off the rails. We're all sane levels of sane. You know, we're all, you know, some level of sane, but we have moments of insanity or illogic, and we make stupid decisions all the time. Unless you're perfect, which nobody is. So I figured, yeah, there would be people who would go, do I really want to read a story about a bad, just a crappy dad? But I do feel like there are a lot of people out there who will see this and go, well, okay, yeah, I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. You know, I could make these dumb decisions. I could screw my whole life up in the next 5 minutes. So yeah, I did kind of latch onto that and just, I rode that wave.
Yeah, I did, man, especially when I was younger, not as much now, but every time I'd be driving somewhere on a mountain road and there was like a railing and a big cliff, I would always think I could just like totally make a right turn, 90 degree right turn right now, and my life would completely change. You know, maybe that's an insane thought, but I always would think about it. Like, how crazy would my life go if I just right turn over the guardrail, tumbling down the side, you know, over into the water or whatever.
I don't think that's a crazy thought at all. I think that is a completely normal thought. And there's many thoughts I have that I think would be classified as insane, but I've got to convince myself that I think a lot of people have completely irrational thoughts. The fact that you don't act on them makes you rational.
Right, exactly.
We all think really up things all the time.
Yeah.
And if you don't, amazing. And you have a lot less clutter in your mind. But you, things come up in your mind and you have to shut them down. It's just, I think that's what makes you rational. You know, there's plenty of irrational stuff swirling around all the time. and what ifs.
Yep, exactly. Well, you mentioned you're already working on the second issue, and obviously with this concept, you could probably go on indefinitely, but do you have an idea in mind in a kind of a perfect situation where, you know, all the issues get funded of how long, how many issues, how long the story might be?
No, I would love to do it forever. I mean, I'm a teacher. I actually see the light at the end of the tunnel. I've been doing this for 20 years. I would love if this was like my second act, my second career. Mm-hmm. I would keep doing it as long as people came to, you know, came to pay their way in. I have an end game, but it could be 20 issues from now. It could be 50 issues from now. It's hard to do, to write four stories and lay them out this way. And I am kind of obsessive, and during the COVID, I mean, you know, clearing your mind enough to do this has definitely been a challenge.
Right.
But I would love to keep doing it because it is infinite. I would love to loop back and tell issue one again and tell four other outcomes of this road rage incident. You know what I mean? So I can fold this story in on itself 50 times. And I think if I'm good enough, people would enjoy it. So yeah, it's infinite. And but like I said, there is, I didn't mention this before, but there is okay, let me stop. I'm getting ahead of myself. The shadowy organization. There is a fourth row along the bottom that is kind of like the Michael Douglas, the game thing. So when this thing splinters, you've already been kind of dipping your toe in the water from page four. That's where things start to get weird, because page four, it's the normal, you know, family stuff, but the bottom row, kind of this swamp thing that I mentioned earlier, you start to see another version of him who's been very wildly successful. He's a very wealthy LA lawyer with a lot of time and money on his hands, and he's bored. So that's a bad combo. And he is looking at the menu at the Four Seasons. He's got this representative of the shadowy organization showing him the menu, so to speak, of things he can do in the multiverse. So that has been playing out from page four. So when page eight happens, that splinters the road rage thing. So now we had two stories from page four to page eight. Now we have four stories. So like that shadowy organization will be a part of the end game. They're kind of seeing the lay of the land. They've seen it since the late 90s, and their main adversary has seen the lay of the land since the 1950s. So there's going to be a major multiversal blowout. I mean, that is the end game, but I could squeeze a ton of stuff in between now and then. So just like any arc where like DC or Marvel tells their writer that they're getting the axe soon, there will be a moment that if it doesn't look like this thing's going to continue to be funded, I can pull that ripcord and have, you know, an issue two or two of the finale at any point. But I would love to I'd love to do this forever. It's so fun.
Yeah. And like you said, it's the possibilities are, it's literally built in the story that the possibilities are infinite, you know, any decision, any moment where it can splinter. And I do want to let you listeners, I do want to let you listeners know. So the project is already fully funded. So this is another situation where if you go and pledge for the campaign, that you're for sure going to be able to get the book. And the other thing is that you've run a lot of successful Kickstarters in the past, right, Mike? So you kind of have the experience, you know how to get them fulfilled, and nobody has to worry about anything from that perspective, right?
Correct. Between the Sequart stuff, the nonfiction stuff, we kickstarted a few documentaries. The She Makes Comics one was our biggest. It made 55,000, which blew our minds. But yeah, since then, when Julian, my partner in crime, kind of started the fictional stuff, he's been doing this with just his little mom and pop comics company that he's funding on credit cards. So we've never missed a fulfillment on this.
And do you want to let our listeners know what some of the tiers are, what some of the things they can pledge if they want to join the campaign?
Sure. And, you know, the lower tier stuff would be a digital copy for $3 of the Tessellation number one. Physical copy is, I believe, $13. There's shipping depending on where, you know, we have to ship to, but $13. For the physical. I can't wait to hold the physical, honestly, just to see if this thing works row by row. And then Julian, my partner, he's been publishing comics since 2014. He's this big Martian universe that he's created where they've been kind of infiltrating humans, cloaked Mars, but been infiltrating, sending their consciousness to kind of body snatch in a new kind of way. So he's been doing this Martian universe since 2014. So I bring that up because there's a tier in like the $50 range or $60 range where you could buy the entire Martian Lit comics catalog, which would be his five titles that are interconnected in the Martian universe, plus the two issues we've done for Necropolitan that takes place in hell, unrelated to the Martian stuff. That tier, I believe, is 60, and you would get the whole library in digital. It's like 1,000 pages of comics for $60. And then we get to the Hernan levels. Hernan's the penciler, inker for the Tessellation, and he will draw you all sorts of stuff in pop culture, or Martian Lit characters, or we have a fun one where you would provide us a picture of you, and then you would give us, I think it's like $100. You would give us three things that you thought you could have been in the multiverse, or would have loved to have been in the multiverse. A scuba diver, a skydiver, a person in the army, or a Ghostbuster, or whatever. Right. And he will draw a landscape style triptych of these three versions of you in action. That's cool. A fun one. And for $600, for anyone wild and crazy enough to do the $600 tier, we will write a story of you in the multiverse. You could either just take that Hernan idea of the triptych and just suggest us something you'd love to see of you in the multiverse, or maybe you're going on vacation in the multiverse, and we'll write a four-page script and draw it up and color it and everything. And you know, that could be your personal thing that you just have, a story about yourself, you know, like as if someone wrote you a song. Or if, you know, we really vibe on this and we all love it, we probably would just include it as a backup story in a future Tessellation comic. So it runs the gamut. Oh, and the stretch goal right now is we got Hernan to draw some of the versions of the main character of issue number 2, and we're turning it into a fun retro kind of choose your own adventure cover, and that'll be a print that we send to everybody if we cross the $3,000 threshold.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it looks like you're going to get there based on the amount of time. So as we're recording this, everybody, there's 20 days left, I believe. Let me double check that. Yeah, there's 20 days to go. So as we're releasing this, there's about like 14 or 15 days to go, and almost there to the $3,000 goal. So there's a link in the show notes, everybody. Go and check it out. As I always say, even if you don't think it's for you, or you don't have the means to back the project right now, even though you might want to, please share it on social media. As many eyes as we can get on this thing, then we're reaching more people that may have the means, or you know, it's definitely going to speak to them. So that's the big thing. So many of these Kickstarter projects are so awesome. It's just a matter of you know, people getting a chance to see it. You know, so many of these people just never realize that they're out there. So even if you can't pledge or you think it's not for you, just please share on social media so everybody can check it out, because it is such an interesting concept. Like we were saying, that I think a lot of people can relate to. But you mentioned your artist, Hernan, and this is such an interesting and kind of just new way to tell a story with these, you know, four kind of landscape rows, as you called them, Mike, going along. So when you brought it to Hernan, was it something where he was like, oh, my God, that's a crazy idea? Did it click for him right away? Like, what was that, you know, like?
It was one of the best moments of my creative life. He was my fourth artist on this. As you can imagine, people look at the script and they head for the hills.
Right.
It's a 30-page comic, and it's 30,000 words, the script.
Oh my
God. It's literally averaging 1,000 words per page, because I am anal and I am OCD and I'm a teacher, and part of my teaching personality and what they tell you to do in teaching is you have to say the directions in multiple ways because you have multiple learners. So this was in my wheelhouse as an OCD person, is that I over-explain, and I've been given license to over-explain by my profession. So when I wrote this script, I had no idea, first of all, I was going to be a Spanish speaker who actually ended up drawing it. That was, if I had known that, I would have overly simplified things.
Right.
But first artist, He spoke Portuguese. He's from Brazil. It just wasn't working. Like, we, long story short, he kept drawing certain things that I felt like, and I love this guy, and he still works with Julian and Martian Lit, and he's a nice guy. But I felt like every time he delivered a page, there was 17 things I wanted to change. And you can't do that as a writer. You've got to pick your battles because you don't want them to head for the hills.
Yep.
So it just wasn't working out. So I had to say, look, I mean, I paid him for his time, but we had to move on. Amicable breakup. The second artist came and went within a month, and he was just like, I'm sorry, I can't do this. You know, I got personal stuff. The third guy stuck around for 8 months, but he had a bunch of medical issues, and it was wearing him out. My comic and his own life was wearing him out. So I was getting so discouraged, and I found this great page on Facebook that is just kind of called Connecting Artists and Writers, something like that. Connecting Comics Artists and Writers. I took a shot in the dark. I posted it on there. I put every kind of disclaimer, just letting you know, this is wild. It's crazy. You're probably going to hate it. I need you to know up front that you're going to hate this. It's a long, crazy Alan Moore script. I'm not comparing myself to Alan Moore. I'm just saying it's long.
Right. Regard. Yep.
And, you know, you get the typical mercenaries who show up and go, yeah, I can do it for this. I can do it for that. I mean, they're just hungry, and I don't blame them. They're just there to work.
Yeah.
So then you have to parse through all of these 30 or 40 offers. And Hernan hit that sweet spot where I could afford him. No offense to Hernan. I'm just saying it is a gamble because you got 30 pages you got to make.
Yeah.
And he was affordable and really good for the price. I was so blown away that he was willing to do it for the price that we agreed upon. And so I send it to him, not expecting much. And he comes back and he's like, I mean, I love this. Like, he almost made it seem right away that this was going to be his baby too, but I didn't know if he was just playing the mercenary game and just saying what he needed to say to get the green light.
Right.
So fast forward to now, I feel like he's one of my best friends. I mean, if I could stretch out our Facebook Messenger conversation, it would go for miles. Like, we shoot the breeze. We talk about each other's kids all the time. We are friends. And this guy lives half a world away in central Argentina, but we're both in our early 40s. We both have a couple of kids, and I think that's kind of the demographic for this, you know, like a parent in their 40s, like kind of long. Anyway, I'm rambling, but he loved it. He said, I can do this. And I was skeptical, but he did it. And there are still moments where he would deliver something where I'm like, I need this change. And he would automatically apologize and go, oh, maybe it was a translation error. I'm sorry. He kind of spoiled me. Yeah. The next artist I work with, I've got to really make sure that I don't step over that line, because he just always blames himself. He is the nicest. I hope this guy blows up. I expect him to become way more expensive because he's got that right combination of competence and perseverance and just a great personality. His name is Hernan Gonzalez. He is a godsend. He is amazing. I think he's going to be one of my best friends for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, beyond, and that, you know, I always give people that advice. Like, it's the whole thing of, okay, if you're working in comics, if you can be nice, you can be good, you can be on time. The first thing as a co-creator, as a colleague, you always want the person, more than anything, you want them to be nice. Second thing is you want them to be on time. Third thing is you want them to be good. That's actually the third thing. Being nice is the most important thing, because nobody wants to work with somebody who's a jerk. So that's just, I say it all the time. Any, you know, and I know I have aspiring creators that listen, remember that, be nice. That's number one. But the other thing for him to be so good at this, it seems to me, and it's probably, you know, part of maybe the trouble you had with the first guy, they've got to understand the concept on a fundamental level and have that buy-in and passion that this is a freaking cool idea. This is a cool idea and a great way to tell a story. And it sounds like Hernan had that, like, right from jump.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't hurt that he called me a goddamn genius. That was his response when he was gone. That definitely buttered me up. Like, when I got that, I probably like laughed very hard out loud. It was like, because it's not a complex idea. It's an anthology. It's just told in a different format.
Right.
Like, I am a genius. The fact that he said that, I felt so good that I think I stuck the landing. He didn't say, yeah, I like this. I see what you're trying to do, but I have a lot of questions. The fact that he came out with that at first, I mean, I laughed. I wanted to believe it. Anytime you get a compliment, you want to fully, wholeheartedly believe it.
Right.
But the fact that he made me feel right away that he was going to let this be his baby too, and he has not given me one moment of doubt since then. And we're talking probably last July when we first started talking. I feel like he's adopted it as his baby too. He wants to do this. He wants to be a part of this. He is fully my co-creator now. And he was a needle in a haystack. I pinch myself all the time. Just, you know, you throw it out to the wind there on a page like that, where people are just circling looking for jobs.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's so cool. Like you said, definitely a needle in a haystack. What about your colorist on the book? Because that's another part of this. Because, you know, when we're talking about telling all these different stories that are, you know, can start out just, you know, from a split second decisions, a minor change, then maybe the colors aren't that different for each row to start with. But then as each of these kind of stories takes on its own tone, some can go darker, some can end up, you know, in a more kind of happy way. That's something that can be depicted with color. So I feel like getting the right color artist is hugely important as well. So can you talk to us a little bit about your color artist and how they came on board the project and how it's going?
Yeah, luckily, because, you know, I finally solidified everything with Hernan. Once it's drawn, you don't have to hopefully go through the same 2 or 3 or 4 person process with the colorist. And his name is Javi Laparra. And I had met him a long time ago when we were trying to get Necropolitan off the ground. So I knew him and he saw my post about, okay, you know, we got these first few pages looking for a colorist, and he responded. And, you know, again, it's going to sound cheesy, but I feel just so lucky. Like, he has got the same demeanor as Hernan. He's like, hey man, you're the boss. You paid for this. I will do whatever you need to do. And my first idea, and maybe we can eventually pull it off, but my first idea was, and if you've ever watched the show Devs on Hulu, D-E-V-S, Devs, again, spoiler alert, just letting you know, fast forward 20 seconds. At the end of Devs, multiple realities happens, and the director or cinematographer shows them with different color tints. And, you know, depending on what you're seeing like a green tint or a yellow tint. And I was so happy to see that, because that was my idea, like, from the outset. I'm like, okay, these people who are reading this are going to be a little bit like, I don't want to have to keep flipping back just to make sure that I know what story I'm reading. So let's give each one a color signature, right, its own tint, its own tone. So when I first pitched this to Javi, he was like, yeah, let's go for it. And, you know, just like with anybody like Hernan early on, I'm like, oh, is he just saying that because he wants the job? But he's like, no, there's actually technology for the coloring system that I use, that once you're done coloring it, when you lay a tone over top of it or a tint over top of it, the colors you've already done adapt to the tint. So I was so happy when I heard him say that. I'm like, I can't believe this technology exists. We can pull this off. So the idea was to do that. Give each row its own character tint. Mm-hmm. Problem is, it's, for as cool as that technology is, it wasn't working enough, because, you know, every page, every panel is going to have different stuff,
right,
for the normal coloring. So that when you lay the tint over top, it's going to adapt to that tint in different ways. So I was coming across the problem for the bottom row that starts on page 4. They're at the Four Seasons. They're having this meal. The shadowy organization representative is showing the menu of these wacky adventures that the main character can have. And the background of every single panel was a slightly different shade of green. And it was messing me up.
Yeah.
And that's a little thing, but to an anal kind of OCD person, I was like, well, how can we? So then speaks volumes about Javi. He's like, okay, no problem. Maybe what I can do is I can change the color of the tablecloth to counteract that change. So he was all along the way, just like, yeah, sure. No problem. I just feel like I've been blessed with this, you know, all-star team of tolerant people who really know what I'm trying to pull off here. But in the end, we had to pull the plug. on that and just let it be what it is with typical normal coloring. Maybe in the future we can come back to that. But for now, I mean, I'm sure the reader is going to be smart enough to know that, oh, the top row is when he does this with the floor accelerator, and the middle row is when he doesn't do anything with the accelerator or whatever. So like, they'll just have to be, you know, a little bit more on their toes when they're reading it.
But I imagine there's still, just based on what's happening in the story, there's still, you know, maybe not a tint over it, but you're going to get an idea of, you know, this is kind of the darker storyline where things take a darker turn, as opposed to, I mean, because that's just in the wheelhouse of a good color artist, right? Like if you're telling a happy story, it's bright colors. And if it's more, you know, moody or a horror story, you're using, you know, a different color palette. So, you know, I'm sure Javi's, you know, able to accomplish that. So do you feel like that's something that readers will be able to pick up on?
Sure. I mean, this is all dark. I mean, this first one, like I said, is coming from a lot of self-loathing. So, I mean, there's definitely a pall over the whole affair. And Javi definitely knows what's going on there. And he definitely picks up on that. And the Choose Your Own Adventure homage that we're doing for the stretch goal of this campaign, I said, we're making one of those old school covers. So this isn't going to be your typical color it naturally.
Right.
I want this to be bombastic, just go wild with this thing, like a 1980s painting that would be on one of those books. And boy, did he deliver. It's a kaleidoscope of wackiness. So I'm really happy. Like, the guy is definitely good at what he does.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, congratulations on funding the project, Mike. You know, best of luck to hit as many stretch goals as you can. Again, listeners, there will be a link in the show notes for everybody to go and check it out. As I mentioned before, even if you're not able to become part of the campaign or you don't think it's for you, please at least share it on social media. So as we're winding up here, Mike, do you want to let everybody know where they can find you on social media? And if you have anything else for Sequard or anything else that you want to mention?
Sure. On Twitter, I'm at Mike Makes Comics, M-I-K-E-M-A-K-E-S Comics. And Sequard is just sequart.org. sequart.org, and that's our nonfiction comics appreciation site, comics criticism site. I also made a comic book that's, you know, Game of Thrones or Gangs of New York in hell, with all of the worst people in history, called Necropolitan. That's a fun one, and you can find that on Martian Lit's website. That's martianlit.com, martianlit.com. And that's it. And thanks for listening. It's always fun to talk with about this stuff. So thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Like I said, I'm pledging. I'm getting a physical copy. It's just such an interesting concept. I can't wait to check it out. So again, everybody, links in the show notes. I'll put a link for Martian Lit and all the other websites and Mike's social media. And of course, the big one being the link to the Kickstarter campaign. So please go and check it out. So thanks to Mike Phillips for joining us. Best of luck with the project. Hope it goes on for a long, long time. And to you listeners, we want to thank you for listening as always. And we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.